Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. And Steve's
I'm sorry, I'm still laughing about the conversation we literally were just having. About,
I understand.
About your sister.
Yeah, my sister is fine, thank you.
Okay.
But yes.
I misinterpreted what you said.
Yes, I was I caused some trouble on Facebook and whatever. Let's get on to the show, my friend, because we had yet another interesting week. Let's start with the Trump pardons, because the Trump pardons feel to me like he was just going to say, he's just doing the fuck you to everyone. Like, I got off from my impeachment. Now I'm going to show you not only am I president, I'm going to pardon people that piss you off. Is that accurate?
Well, that's how it feels to me. I mean, it kind of like that. I think the other part of it is that he pardoned a lot of people that have in some way, shape, or form pledged their allegiance to him. You know, kind of the standout on the list is Rod Blagojevich. He was the governor of Illinois. This was happening while I was in law school in Chicago at the time, which was it was a crazy few years right? I mean, you had the R. Kelly trial, you had this, you had the former governor, George Ryan, who was also in trial at the time. There's just, Chicago's a happening city. But Blagojevich was the governor, and then he got busted on audio tape, mind you, trying to sell Obama's Senate seat, right?
Yeah.
In
no uncertain terms.
Right. I mean, he said, this thing is a fucking gold mine, and he wants as much as he can get for it, you know, paraphrasing, but that's what he said.
Fucking gold mine is not a paraphrase. That's a quote.
Well, yes. There's no arguing, and there were people out there who tried to say, well, if you really look at this case, Blagojevich, you know, he got hit with too much, he got sentenced to too long of a sentence, and okay. One, I was there, right? This guy didn't just get busted for one. That phone call is enough by itself that you're trying to sell a Senate seat. Think about what we're talking about here. He's trying to get people to give him money to take a Senate seat.
To appoint
them to the Senate. And these are people who will have, you know, control in our government. They have a direct say in how our government operates. Like, that in and of itself is undermining democracy, right? Like, in no uncertain terms, that's why corruption is a problem, right? That's why Trump was so worried about what was going on in Ukraine, folks. Remember, right? Like, that's why he's so pissed off about Hunter Biden, right? He was really worried about corruption. Anyway, so you've got this Blagojevich. It wasn't only that, though. He was doing this on every level, right? Like, so what he went to jail for was the phone call about Obama. But this guy, he also tried to extort a children's hospital. Right, like, so I mean, he got impeached from the governorship, and then he got found guilty, and then he went to jail. But I mean, he was a scumbag.
In the meantime, he was on Celebrity Apprentice. By the way, yes. I have not gotten to say Blagojevich yet on the show, and saying Blagojevich is just fun. So I'm saying
Blagojevich. It is. I mean, and I'm sure someone had fun saying it in prison with him.
I'll give you the full Blagojevich.
Right. So you take from that what you will. But Blagojevich has come out and said that he's not a Democrat, he's not a Republican, he's a Trumpocrat.
But he was on Celebrity.
He was
Apprentice.
On Celebrity
he brought
Apprentice.
That to my
so
attention.
There's a direct connection and correlation there. Now, what's also interesting is that Blagojevich was on Celebrity Apprentice, and Trump recently came out when he was explaining, like, oh well, Trump said that he was doing this, he was given the commutation of the sentence because, well, you know, Blagojevich seems like a nice guy, and he doesn't want his family to be without him anymore. And he doesn't know him. He never met him. But, you know, and it's just like, okay. Like, I mean, again, he's blatantly lying, and this is where...
It was on NBC.
Right, and this is where it gets frustrating with his supporters. Like, if you support the guy because you believe some of his policies are working in your favor, and you don't want to see that go away, say that. Right, but at the same time, you should be able to hold Trump accountable for when he's not telling the truth. You don't need to spin it. You don't need to lie. You don't need to go attack the media. Like, this is shit that is right there in front of you, right? Like, it was on TV. It wasn't on PBS. Right. It wasn't on Steve and Jim's YouTube channel. This shit was on in fucking BC.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he, you know, I mean, like, multiple, there's, I'm sure there's, like, Blagojevich didn't make it, so that means Trump had to fire him. So that means at some point in time, the two fuckers had to come in contact. So this whole idea that Trump didn't know him is absurd. But he said it.
I can't believe he said it. I didn't hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. You know, it was like, on Twitter that he said, you know, "Oh, I never met the guy, or I don't know the man." But you know, what? It's like, are you serious? You know, so that kind of kicks off this firestorm, and then one of the next people is Eddie DeBartolo Jr. Now that is
a hometown guy for you,
right? Near and dear to my heart. He's a Youngstown guy. Now Eddie DeBartolo Jr.'s situation was he was owner of the San Francisco 49ers. He also was trying to get a riverboat down in New Orleans, down in Louisiana. The governor of Louisiana basically tries to extort him. Well, does successfully extort him and says, "You want this license." Right, like you've met all the requirements, but if you want this license, you need to pay me for it, right? Beyond what the standard fees and, you know, all the fees were for it. So on top of whatever he had to pay that was, you know, statute-based, DeBartolo ended up giving the guy another $400,000, right, on top of it. And he never reported it, and he was just like, all right, whatever, I got what I need. Well, that's a crime, right? Like, yeah, I mean, because he paid for this thing, you know, above and beyond what he was supposed to pay. And he ends up, because he didn't report the extortion and he paid the money, he ends up being found guilty. He never went to jail for it, but he had, you know, 5 years of probation or something like that. And then he ends up giving up control of the 49ers to the York family, which is a weird connection how there's a weird story.
It's like his stepsister or something like that?
It's his sister, but she married John York.
Okay.
Who, oddly enough, John York's niece... married one of my good friends from high school.
Okay. Like I said, that was a young town thing. When telling the story, it reminds me of Godfather Part 2, right? Yeah. When the senator's trying to extort Michael Corleone, my offer is this, nothing.
Right.
That's what Eddie DeBartolo Jr. should have.
You know, and I think he just looked at it as, I mean, this again, this like is in the mid-90s.
Small potatoes compared to...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't make. Small potatoes. I mean, it's a lot of money back then because, again, this is the mid-90s. It was a lot of money, but at the same time, when compared to what he was going to make, it made sense. So Eddie DeBartolo Jr. goes down. Now, the connection here is a lot of people feel, or there's a sentiment that Trump is doing this because he wants to win Ohio, right? And he wants to win all of Ohio. Mahoning Valley, he had a really tough time... And so he feels that if he does this for Eddie DeBartolo Jr., you know, the Youngstown area, you know, kind of goes over the hump and says, yeah, Trump's our guy now because he did this for our guy. I don't know if people in Youngstown are that pliable. You know, but yeah, he
I
mean, was...
You would know better than me, but
he
I
was.
Think not.
I mean, he was, you know, Trump was within 2 points of getting the county anyway. You know, so who knows? So I'm not sure why he did it, and I don't know how much of a supporter the DeBartolo family is of Trump. You know, they've been relatively low key the last, I don't know, 20, actually since this all went down.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure if they're what the motivation was. It just feels like when Trump does things like this, there's some sort of ulterior motive.
Sure.
Just not sure what it is. But that's been floated out there.
So he also commuted the sentence or pardoned Bernie Kerik, who was a Bush nominee for the Department of Homeland Security lead. Now, Bernie Kerik was an interesting guy because he was real tight with Giuliani. He was the chief of police of New York City. He had like three mistresses with three different stash pads. And what got him the exposure was that he was, you know, just... banging chicks all around New York City and all these apartments assigned or laid out for his mistresses, which people jokingly, including me, said that if this guy can handle a family and three mistresses, he can probably handle the Department of Homeland Security. So maybe he was the man for the job, but he was also involved in a bunch of corruption.
Yeah, I mean, it was because some people are, what people are out there saying is like, oh, well, you know, this is, I mean, you know, obviously he's a Republican because, you know, Clinton lied about getting a blowjob and
right.
He gets to keep his job and this guy is banging women around town and, you know, he doesn't get the job. It's like, well, Kerik was doing more than just banging broads around town and lying about it. That was one of the things he lied about, but there was, I mean, he was, you know, another guy who was taking money, was taking bribes. You know, again, you had stop and frisk and things like that going on with people being, you know, just flat out abused by the police. So there was a laundry list of things that were issues with Kerik, and his connection is he's a Giuliani guy.
Yeah.
You know,
and Rudy and Trump are still buddies for right. the time being. We'll see how long that lasts.
Right. You also have, I'm just going through a few others. So he pardoned 10 or he 11 granted people, like, clemency yeah. to 10 or 11 people. You got Michael Milken, who was, you know, a fraudster in the 80s through yeah. securities exchange and things like that. Ponzi scheme, kind of, sort of. But he was...
It was securities fraud. Right. I mean, and that guy, I remember him being, like, at the front of the news. I was in high school, I think, at the time. And lots of people lost a shit ton of money.
Yes.
And security in their lives because of him.
Including, yeah, I mean, he had to pay back $700 million, which is no... I mean, which is no yeah. joke, which is huge. Which was huge. It was the biggest number at the time until Bernie Madoff and then a few other people around that time. Have eclipsed them in the billions, but I mean, it's crazy. And you know, it wasn't all people that, you know, white collar crime. You have you've got this Tynesha Nicole Hall. She had, you know, drug charges. She was, you know, mixed up with a bad boyfriend, and she got 14 years. Trump commuted her sentence. Crystal Munoz, another one, drug trafficking. He commuted her sentence. You know, she served 8, and she was convicted and supposed to do 20. There's a woman who did, who committed $205 million worth of Medicare fraud. She got hit with 35 years. He commuted her sentence. You know, there's a guy.
What's the underlying vibe here? To me, it's like, again, I took it as a fuck you to everyone who came out against him.
No, I think it's more nuanced than that. I think most of the people here have either, you know, you've got a lot of ties to Giuliani on this list. I mean, you've got, you know, Carrick and Milken and even, you know, Blagojevich and who else here? You got a few other people that are tied to Giuliani. You've got people who have openly expressed their
support Trump.
Of yep. Trump, who have given interviews and said they believe that Trump is doing the right thing in terms of all this criminal justice reform, which he's, I don't know, like he's done some criminal justice reform, but literally the criminal justice reform that he got through was called the First Step Act. So the idea that he's just reformed criminal justice with the First Step makes kind of no sense based off just the name of it. But, you know, so the theme is, I think, people either with direct connections to Trump, people that have pledged their allegiance to Trump openly, and then people who Trump feels like the crimes they've committed aren't crimes, right? Like, oh, tax fraud, that's not a crime. Oh, you know, like,
right.
you know, fucking around with money and, you know, all these loopholes. They're not loopholes. They're literally laws against doing this. And, you know, that I think that's the fuck you part of it, but I think that it's multi-layered.
And so then, in addition to those, we also have another Trump associate in the legal system getting sentenced. We talked about it last show. Roger Stone, who got sentenced to 40 months. Do you think he'll ultimately get pardoned? Because I don't see how he doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of time. I think Trump will...
It's bad for election visibility right now.
I don't even know. I don't think that it is. I think, again, Trump supporters are going to vote for Trump. I think there is a very, very narrow margin of people that are on the fence that don't know if they're going to vote for him again or not. And I don't think Trump cares about them so much. And I think what will happen is that he'll pardon them on his own time, whether it's before the election. I mean... He could, in theory, pardon him right now if he wanted to, because he has been convicted. So he could just pardon him and say, don't even waste your time sentencing him, or, you know, processing him for prison because I'm going to pardon him. But I think there's enough people in Trump's ear saying you need to wait a little bit that he will, but I don't know if it lasts past the election. Right? I don't know if we get to November. I feel that before we get to November, we're going to hear Roger Stone has been pardoned. Now, I could be wrong, but even if it's after that, it's going to happen probably in the next couple years at minimum before Trump is out of office.
Right. I mean, if Trump is not reelected, he's got nothing to lose.
Right,
he'll
absolutely.
He'll do a last minute pardon. And if he is reelected, he's got absolutely nothing to lose.
Right.
And Roger Stone will probably not only get pardoned, but get a White House.
Right. He'll get the Congressional Medal of
Freedom. Yes.
Yeah.
Presidential Medal. Yeah.
But it's. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's interesting. And a lot of people are really upset about, you know, how it went down with, you know, with the judge and with, you know, Barr coming in. And I think Barr coming in and reducing that sentence and reducing the recommendation is problematic. Because the other part is, like, the judge did, like, so this is the way it happens, right? So the prosecutors come in with their suggested reason or their suggested sentencing, right? They say you should do 7 to 9 years, right? So there's a base level or a minimum level minimal suggested, you know, sentencing guideline based off the crime. So let's say it starts at 4 years, okay? Prosecutors then go in and they add these escalators, right, or enhancements. And they say because of this, this, and this, we believe it should go from 3 or 4 years up to 7 to 9 years, right? And then they list that, and they literally, what they do is they will list out each, they'll list out the reason, and then they'll explain, you know, the reasoning behind the reason for the enhancement. And in this particular case...
Is that a legal... The enhancement's a legal term?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I've never heard that
used
that way. You're a lawyer, I'm not.
So in Roger Stone's case, that the biggest charge against him was witness tampering, right?
Right.
You know, you had this shock jock, you know, this very progressive liberal shock jock DJ from New York, who Roger Stone had... You know, made statements about, or had made statements about how, you know, he was getting information from Julian Assange about this hack of the DNC server and all this other stuff. So, this DJ from New York is supposed to be a witness, and then Roger Stone goes, threatens the guy, and, you know, sends like, and it's all in text messages, right? Like, it's text messages and voicemails,
documentable, like recordable,
like recorded, documented things that were presented in court, right? And it's just like, you know, like he didn't just tamper with the witness, like by, you know, like
bumping into him in the mall, shoulder him in the mall,
right? Like, say, I mean, hey, he's issuing, you know, verifiable threats to this person. You know, it's not like he just flattened a tire so he couldn't show up to testify. You know, so the prosecutors lay that out for the judge, and the judge looks at it, and then they take that into consideration, and then ultimately the judge will levy the punishment. They'll say, you know what, while I agree it's worse than the minimum, it doesn't need the maximum, so instead of, you know, I'm not going to give him the minimum of 3, but I'm not going to give him the max of 9. I'm going to go 5, right? Judges do that all the time. And that's where prosecutors, your federal prosecutors, are upset about the way Attorney General Barr handled it, because Barr knows damn well that the judge is not going to sit there and give that guy 9 years, right? And that he's fully capable of making the adjustment down as he sees fit, or he or she sees fit. So that's why it was really unnecessary for Barr to jump in. But Barr did jump in. And now, mind you, when Barr jumped in, the prosecutors that were on the case left.
Right?
They either moved to, you know, they either pulled themselves off the case, or, like, as the one, they just quit the DOJ altogether, which is wild. But, so these new prosecutors come in, they make their suggestions. Here's the thing, they still suggested that this guy go to jail. Right? Like, they still suggested that he go to jail for 3 to 4 years. So, this idea that it was nothing, because there are people out there who are saying, well, he shouldn't go to jail at all, right? Like, you can't try to intimidate a witness in your own federal trial and then just think you're going to fucking walk away from it. Yeah, I mean, like, that's a crazy thing. Now, but
is that wrong? I got a bit of ignorance here, because
I mean, it's a really bizarre situation, from just one Roger Stone, who he is.
He's a cartoon character.
Right. I mean, the witness involved. I mean, the witness involved is just as loony in this, right? I mean, the witness is the guy, he carries a little dog around, like Roger Stone said he was going to, like, take his dog and all this other shit. Like, it's fucking nuts. So it just, the fact that Barr inserted himself is ridiculous. And then the fact that, you know, he comes back and you still have a sentence for 3 or 4 years. You know, just kind of tells you where it's at. But what will make this even more ridiculous, if Trump comes in and says, all right, I'm going to pardon you, which we all believe that he will, you know,
probably before he ever reports to a sentence, right? I mean, he'll be able to stall it for how long? Months, right?
Yeah, for a while. He'll be able to put it off for a little bit before he goes. So, I mean, you know, if he can push it off until the election, and you know, he may say he's going to report November 20th, you know, and then, you know, Trump,
one way or the other,
you know, Trump's in or out or whatever, and he's just like, oh, by the way, before I go, or you know, before we get back on with it, you know, let's get Roger Stone out of there.
You know, so you brought up Julian Assange in this conversation, and you've made it clear in past shows that you are no fan of Mr. Assange.
No.
He is now claiming that Trump bribed him to state that the Russian hack didn't happen. Is that, am I getting that right?
Try to cover it up.
Try to, right. So, do you believe a word that he's saying?
The question is, do you? See, here's the problem. Right. Here's the problem. My issue with Julian Assange, everyone's like, oh, he did us a favor because, you know, government's doing shady shit. I've never, first of all, no shit. Yes, our government does very shady shit.
As does every other government.
Right. Yes. But if, like, this idea that it's just okay, first of all, Julian Assange isn't even, he's not even a patriot, right? Like, he's from England. Fucking wherever. Like, I don't know, I actually don't know where he's a citizen of.
I think just
because this whole thing is a mess. But this guy from another country comes in and steals information about our government, and this is going back to the big WikiLeaks, like the one of the first WikiLeaks, right? And the reason I have an issue with it is it's one thing, like, people are defending it and saying it's journalism. No, it's one thing, like, if someone literally just delivers it to him and says, here you go. You have a true whistleblower situation. Hey, I have this information. I went through I took the risk of getting it on my own. I don't have a way to get it out. Here, what can you do with it? I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Like Snowden. I'm fine with Snowden.
Okay.
What happened here is Assange had communications with this person, right? They said, hey, I'm trying to get this information out. I don't know how to do it. I can't, whatever. Assange gives this guy everything he needs to do. And I think, because Assange even said it in an interview and then retracted it, that he did part of the hack himself to go in and steal the information, right? And then he disseminates it out, right? Like, I'm sorry. That is espionage. That is, like, that in and of itself is espionage. And that I'm not okay with. We can't just allow that as something that we're passing off and then say that's protected free speech. It's not, right? That's not freedom of the press. That's the press going in and stealing information that they're not supposed to steal and then putting it out and then hiding behind the First Amendment, right? Like, if he's going in and telling the guy, this is how you hack it, this is how you steal it, then what could actually be happening? What if Julian Assange is actually a Russian spy, right? And he's telling this guy all the things that he needs to hear to go in and steal information that then gets taken from the United States, gets handed over to one of our enemies, and ends up killing American citizens, right? Like, that's you have to play it out, you know, you have to play the whole movie out in your head.
And the big thing he did was expose a lot of the ugliness of war, right? He showed, I think his big video was called Collateral Murder, where he basically was showing what we could call collateral damage, where Iraqi civilians were getting killed in airstrikes. And the reason why I think you and I have different opinion on Julian Assange is that I don't like the whitewashing of how ugly war is. Like, you know,
okay, but Jim, that's fine. I don't like it. I don't like the whitewashing of it either. But there's still rules and boundaries that we have to fucking live by. This can't just be a free for all just because we don't like something. And the reason, listen, the Washington Post just did a huge earlier this year, or not? I guess towards the end of 2019, they did this huge expose on basically the last 20 years regarding Iraq and Afghanistan and how we had no plan, how we went in there and we were trying to use techniques that worked in World War II that didn't work. You know, we were carrying things from Vietnam that didn't work in Vietnam, and why the fuck would they work in Iraq or Afghanistan? About the number of lives that were taken, about the money that was spent, about just the complete disorganization. All that was gathered through legal means, right? The way it's supposed to be done, right? Julian Assange took a back door to do it. And if your argument is, well, how else are we going to get the information? This is how the Washington Post just showed you how you do it, right? Like, you don't steal it, right? Because what that sets up is for the Russian spy, the Chinese spy, or whoever to find a vulnerable person in the U.S. government. And this time they're not taking secrets to expose us. They're taking secrets to fucking kill us. And that's the part that irks me and why Julian Assange is a fucking problem.
And so, all right, I asked you if you believed his story and you threw it right back at me. And the answer is no.
Now you don't believe him.
Well,
is it because it hurts your narrative? It's a bad look.
I shouldn't say I don't believe him. It's I'm very guarded because maybe he's telling the truth.
What's he have to gain?
Good question. Very good question. And would he do anything without something to gain?
Listen, if he's looking for a pardon. Trump is. You know, like with Trump is in the administration, like Trump is the president of the United States right now. So for him to come out and say this now,
let me check that. You're correct.
It actually makes no sense that he would come out and say that now, unless he's looking for protection from someone else outside the United States.
And I'm not saying you're that's a very good point and an indisputable point. Like, what does he gain from this? I don't know.
Also, it puts him at odds with Russia.
True.
So now, he's saying that, listen, Trump was coming to me to ask me to cover up what Russia did, right? Putin has sit there and said, we know he's full of shit, but Putin has said, we didn't do anything, right? And Assange is just like, well, not only did Russia do it, but Trump asked me to cover it up. Now you've made two enemies with the two big bad bullies on the street that you really don't want to make enemies with.
One of which will flat out murder you
and laugh about it on a fucking bear drinking vodka. So I don't know if that's a good idea.
Fucking with Vladimir Putin, we've discussed on the show, is a high risk proposition.
Right. Fuck around and get suicided.
Good point. Where is he now?
I actually don't know where he is. I know right, he got booted out of the
embassy, a Swedish embassy in England, if I remember
correctly. No, it was an Ecuadorian embassy.
Was it in England?
I thought it was in France. I don't know.
I think it was England. But whatever.
Wherever it was.
All right, so the people who get shitty with us occasionally on Twitter and on other social media, we don't spend our whole day doing this stuff. We're friends who talk about shit. It's a barroom type conversation. Fucking deal with it.
And keeping track of Julian Assange. Listen, the guy's been bouncing because I know he got booted out of the Ecuadorian embassy. And then
he was smearing ketchup all over the place, right, which I think bothered you more than anything else.
This guy's a fucking psychopath. Like, this is the guy that you're putting all your faith in to restore democracy to the U.S. I know, I'm just saying. But the bigger issue is this dude smearing ketchup all over the place.
He's gross, and he was skateboarding down the hallways. I don't mind the skateboarding.
I have serious issues with ketchup.
I do mind the skateboarding. The skateboarding bothers me as much as the ketchup.
So anyway, I guess. My thing is with Julian Assange, I think it's worth noting what he's saying. It's going to get buried with everything else per usual. I think it's worth noting what he's saying, but at the same time, I still want him prosecuted for the crime that he committed.
Okay.
Right. I just that to me is the most important thing. The rest of it is neither here nor there. And I think he hurts himself in that aspect, because there's no way that Trump is going to, Trump kind of tooted this guy's horn because Julian Assange was stroking his ego, but now you're coming out and you're saying, Trump did this thing that I've been saying that he didn't do, and we know Trump is one of the pettiest humans on the planet. He didn't help himself under any circumstance.
The guy who was protecting in the circumstance was Vladimir Putin, who is maybe the most dangerous individual on the planet.
One of the.
All right, so let's go Democratic politics because...
Out to Vegas.
Viva Las Vegas.
Well, I guess first we can kind of start with Bloomberg, right? So Bloomberg, is really kind of making his presence known. We've been talking about him in the last couple of weeks. He's just spent absurd amounts of money, $400 or $500 million already.
Or as he calls it, pocket change.
Yes. We talked about his issues with the race last week with stop and frisk and the problem... why that's problematic, especially for me and people of color. It came out this week now. And now what's happening is you know, everybody's got the knives out, right? Like, they see how big of a threat that he is because of the amount of money that he has. And so you're hearing stuff about him and non-disclosure agreements and women and sexual harassment because, you know, he's telling a lot of just kind of sexist, misogynistic jokes. And who knows, there's probably more to it than just that. He's 75 years old. He is an obnoxiously rich human being. I sent you the thing on how rich he is earlier.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just, like, it's amazing. Like, the thing, like, he has more money than multiple countries, right? Like, combined.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing you sent me, just to paint the picture, it shows, here's how much money Pete Buttigieg has, and it's, you know, $100,000. And then it goes person to person to person, gets a Bernie at $2 million, and then... And it just shows how small that box is compared to Mike Bloomberg. And eventually it's like, and the entire NBA.
Right. Like, all
the National Basketball Association.
The value of all the teams in the NBA
is less than what Mike Bloomberg has.
Right. Wow. I mean, it's just, it's completely insane. But, you know, so I got into an interesting discussion I've had a very similar discussion with a number of people about Mike Bloomberg. Because... a lot of people are just like, do you like him or not? And so I need to be very clear on this. If Mike Bloomberg is the nominee, I will vote for him. Okay?
Right.
But at the same time, if he's the nominee, I will vote for him. And I will push to hold him very accountable for his actions. Now, Mike Bloomberg looks bad on a lot of different faces because of what was going on in New York at the time. Aside from stop and frisk, you've got redlining. You've got what he did to the education system. You've got just taxes and the way he impacted the people there. Yes, crime was down, and yes, things were good for really rich people and developers. But at the same time, there were a lot of people who were, you know, middle class and poor who were really adversely affected, and especially people of color who still are, you know, suffering the repercussions of, you know, the policies that he put in place. So that's something that New York is a massive city, and it's a massive kind of magnifying glass of what our country looks like. And so if that's how he ran New York, what the fuck is he going to do with the entire country at his fingertips? You also have to take into account, which I don't think enough people are talking about, which this irks me a little bit. It's not that just he's not just a billionaire, right? And so it's just like, oh, he's got a lot of money. Why he's a billionaire, okay? The reason why he's a billionaire is that his company literally controls and puts out data that shifts financial markets, right? So yeah, you're going to put a guy with that sort of power already in power, right? Like, so I have serious concerns about his ability to divest himself from his companies while he's running the country. Like, then, Mike, like, the really big fear is you think billionaires are being protected right now with Donald Trump, who is a chump change billionaire compared to what this guy is? Like, that may be the slightly scarier thing. Now, hold on. With all these things, there's other things about Bloomberg that have to be brought in, right? There's a lot of black mayors in this country of major cities that wouldn't be where they were without Mike Bloomberg between his support, like, just vocal and financial. Right? There's also other things, like he started a fund for black youth and gun control called the Greenwood Initiative.
Okay, I don't know about this. You
can go and look it up. I mean, like, so for all the negative things that are out there about Bloomberg, he's done some good things. While he's apologized for the stop and frisk, I'm not giving him credit for the apology because he supported it even after it was found unconstitutional for 20 fucking years, right? So you did a lot of harm, but...
He bragged about it, I would say, right, for the record.
But the other issue with that is stop and frisk didn't start with Michael Bloomberg.
No.
Right? Like, I mean,
no, he inherited that.
And it's still...
Was it Giuliani?
Right. It started with Giuliani. It's still going on now. There's less of it now, but it's still going on. But the disparity still exists. Right, like there's much fewer. There's only 20,000 of these things happening, but it's still 85% of the people it's happening to are black. So Bloomberg is a little bit more than he's more complicated than the really rich boogeyman coming out of nowhere. So again, will I support him? Yes. Will I hold him accountable? Yes. And by hold him accountable, I just don't mean on Twitter and other ways. Like, this is a situation where this guy gets elected. I'm more than willing to fucking take trips to DC and get in front of lobbyists. That's how important he is, because that's how important it is, because that's how dangerous I believe he is or can be.
You know, and the funny thing about Bloomberg is he's a Republican.
Yes.
He was, and now a New York City Republican is, I mean, Mitt Romney is a Massachusetts Republican, and, you know, he was the father of what essentially became Obamacare nationally. So you got to put that into place. But I don't like Bloomberg because I think he's an over-officious, pompous douche. Like, the thing that I go back to all the time is he tried to make it illegal, or maybe succeeded in making it illegal, to buy more than a 20-ounce soda, pop, okay, whatever you want to call it. It's just dumb government overreach, in my opinion.
That's fair. I mean,
then again, it's a silly thing in the grand scheme, but to me it outlines I'm so much smarter than you, I'm so much better than you, I'm going to tell you how to live your life. You're absolutely correct, Mike Bloomberg, that drinking 32 ounces of Dr. Pepper is wasted calories and not healthy and a lot of, sugar and you don't need, you're right. But fuck you. I can make my own decisions about
Jim,
what
you don't even drink pop, so this is such right, a weird argument. You're
right, I know. I used to. I used to drink a ton of it. And I quit because it was bad for me. But to make it illegal is stupid and offensive to me. It's annoying.
I get it, but I guess so we agree, like it's the same sort of thing. Like that's how I feel about him with gun control.
Right.
Right? That's how I feel about him with redlining. That's how I feel about him with, I mean, he said so many offensive things about me, right? Like,
Don't tell me how much Dr. Pepper I could drink, Mike Bloomberg. But, fuck you.
You know, this guy comes out and he says, young black men don't know how to act. Young black men can't do this. They can't be trusted to do that. Right? Like, they shouldn't do this. They shouldn't be out after a certain time. They need this and they need that. And it's like, get the fuck, are you, like, who the fuck are you, right?
How much Dr. Pepper can I drink?
It's, that's only moderately annoying. So, yes,
I'll work on it. It sucks that
these are, they're two of the same issues at varying degrees of their impact. But they still come from that root of arrogance and narcissism and everything else that all goes along with that, which is why he's problematic. But listen, we have the same thing in the White House right now.
Sure.
Right? And so where you have to be careful with Bloomberg is what ends up being so much different between him and Trump, other than Bloomberg will never be on Twitter, and we probably won't have to we won't have issues with porn stars and things like that. You probably won't have the sort of controversy that you have with Trump, but is that really the main thing?
Super Tuesday is going to be the ultimate indicator of exactly how much politics can be bought, because Super Tuesday is dominated by states that are not receptive to New York City gun control mentality, right? It's a lot of the South, a lot of the Midwest, and if he can successfully run.
See, but again, I think there's a, again, he's not going to, you talk about the South and it's not going to be receptive in the South. Okay, that's fine. But again, you're right. With the people who are pro-Trump, pro-gun, blah, 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 yes, he's not going to resonate. But there are plenty of people in the South, in Little Rock, Arkansas, that have seen gang life ravage their city. So when someone comes in and says, we're going to take the guns out of the hands of the black youth, then they're going to be receptive to that message, because that's the traumatic thing that they've seen in their lives. Now, my issue is, yeah, those black youth shouldn't have guns, but the way that they're purporting to change these gun laws isn't going to keep guns out of these kids' hands, right? Like, we need to get to root causes of why these kids are picking up guns and they're committing these crimes and these gun laws that people are so that have fucking progressives' dicks hard, whether it's Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, all of them missed the fucking point, and none of them will do a fucking thing other than take guns out of the hands of legal gun owners, right? They're not going to stop the mass shooting in schools that they're so fucking worried about, and they're not going to stop the violence in the fucking streets. They're literally just doing it to do it, and the people that it's going to hurt the most are people like you and me, and more me than you, right? Because they're like I'm going to become a target all of a sudden for multiple reasons. So that's why I have an issue with guns, and that's why I have an issue with the gun control argument, especially as it's formed coming out of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, because it's not going to be affected by every fucking metric.
But I stand by my statements that it's not going to resonate well in the South.
Right, it's not going to resonate with people who weren't going to vote for Bloomberg anyway. That's not who we're talking to.
The other Democrats have basically towed the line as well. So I guess you're right there. I'm thinking, I guess, more about general election, and in the general election, this plays really badly.
Every single Democrat has the same message about guns.
You're right.
Every single one of them. He's no different.
Oddly, the one that could claim to be different is Bernie Sanders, who used to have a different message on guns,
right,
and then he flipped.
Speaking
of guns, so Caitlin Bennett is someone who I didn't know who the fuck she was.
The gun girl. She went to Kent State.
And she's getting protested. I thought she went to OU.
No, she went to Kent State. The thing you're talking about happened at OU.
All right, so painting the picture as best I can, which is not well, because I frankly didn't know who the fuck she was until 2 hours ago. But she's a pro-gun advocate who wanted to be allowed to carry an AR-15, I guess, across the campus of, was it Kent State?
Yes.
Okay. And then she, transferred to OU and she got protested?
Jesus Christ. Okay. So I think she's since graduated from Kent State. Like, the whole thing at Kent State happened a couple years ago.
All right.
Since then, she's gained notoriety. Like, I know for a fact she graduated because she took a graduation picture with her AR.
All right. Congratulations.
She has since become, you know, a mini arm of the NRA. Like, she goes out and she does these interviews, and her whole point of going out and doing interviews is to show how intolerant the left is, right? Like, so she'll go out and she'll interview people about gun rights, about gun advocacy, the Second Amendment, and she tries to do she tries to hit people with gotcha statements, like, you say this, but you say that. You know, which is the common thing, which is the thing to do.
This gun and that gun, they're the same thing, but one of us would stop.
Not even. I mean, it just, like, you know, would you support this? Would you support that? But yes, all of that sort of stuff. But she goes out just to show how intolerant, like, the progressive left is or can be. And she has yet to fail at showing how ridiculous the progressive left, especially on a college campus, can be. You saw in the video people yelling, screaming, fighting, throwing toilet paper, throwing books. You know what I mean? Like, it gets just out of control. And so, again, that's the type of shit that Trump, his crowd, his surrogates, you know, your gun control advocate or your gun rights advocates, like, these are the type of things that they look at and say, this is what you guys are saying. Like, you guys are the tolerant ones? How are you going to say you're the tolerant ones when you're not letting me get a word in, literally not letting me get a word in without threatening to harm me or actually trying to attempt to harm me?
And they're not wrong.
They're not wrong.
They're not wrong. Look, I'm self-declared liberal, whatever. I'm also a self-declared gun nut. The idea that you're going to attack a person for what they have said in the past as they walk down the streets is fucked up.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know this girl. Dana Loesch is in my head, but who was the other gun right? I'm drawing a blank, sorry. But the idea that you can't express an idea that differs with what you believe on a college campus today bothers the shit out of me. Because so many, I mean, going back to me being a stand-up comic, so many comics won't go to college campuses anymore. And I think it's lame that they won't do it. But I get it. Because why deal with the mess that gets created?
You can't, I mean, like, when it's beyond a mess. Like, I mean, kids literally break down, start crying, like, mostly shut down and try to sue you because they couldn't go to class because you told a joke about black people.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's fucking crazy. I have an issue with it as well. You know, there's a, you know, 10-year gap between you and I, and it seems like which it doesn't seem like we're that far apart, but there's a 10-year gap between me and some of these kids that are fresh off of college campuses, and it's like, it's completely night and day. You know, like, even there's even people my age that are really far progressive left who, if you challenge them in any way and you disagree with any of their ideals or principles, their first reaction is usually, fuck you. The second reaction is usually some sort of a derogatory comment about you, some, you know, personal attack. And then they tell you that you don't know what you're talking about. And that's their form of debate.
Yeah. And if you don't like Pete Buttigieg, oh, you're homophobic.
Yep.
Well,
if you don't like Elizabeth Warren, then you're a
misogynist. Yes.
Right. You hate women.
Yeah. And I mean, I am a homophobic misogynist. No, actually I'm not, but whatever. But, don't make that face. But no, really, it sucks when you can't argue against someone.
And it's not that I can't. It's not even that you can't. I mean, I can't. I mean, no. I mean, like, the arguments are what they are, right? The facts are the facts. The arguments can and should be made. The issue is the person on the other end, and that's on them. Like, I mean, I agree with you. I think it sucks that these comics won't go, but at the end of the day, these comics are trying to make money.
It's not worth their while.
Right. It's not worth it if they're going to have to deal with, you know, like a Dave Chappelle getting protested on a college campus, which is fucking insane. Right. I mean, college campuses should love Dave Chappelle. But yet, you know, they do. And the other part, you know, so much of this is driven by the same old bullshit, right? Like, I guarantee you that there are plenty of guys out there who love Dave Chappelle until they start dating some fucking broad who hates Dave Chappelle because he told a joke that she finds offensive, right? So now that guy, in order to keep banging her, has to hate Dave Chappelle, right?
Much of our decisions are based on that.
Right, I mean, it's just like, are you fucking kidding me? But then you just have the general people who just generally hate these comics because, oh, you told a joke about this and that, like, because everything offends them. Like, listen, if you want to be offended, if you're offended, you're offended, right? I can't judge you for being offended, but I can judge you on how you react to your reaction. You know, I mean, like, if you can't, if you're not willing to have an actual open discussion, debate about it, then you're doing just as much, if not more, harm to the democratic process that you say that the conservatives are doing with their oppressive behavior.
And, you know, the best example of that is Eddie Murphy. If you listen to Eddie Murphy comedy from the, you know, late 80s, which changed my life. I mean, Eddie Murphy was, like, the biggest comic of the time. He was also a comedic actor. He was on Saturday Night Live. But the stuff he said back in the day, you listen to it today and you go, that's kind of rough. And he will acknowledge, that's not cool, whatever.
When's the last time Eddie Murphy's done a stand-up?
He's actually back in the game. Recently, like this year.
Oh, he did a stand-up?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, he's got, I think he's got a special. It might be on Netflix. But the stuff...
You sure it's stand-up? I know he made a movie.
No, he has been doing stand-up again. Hmm. And he's talked about how, you know, the stuff he did back in the late 80s, early 90s wouldn't fly today. And he's right. Having said that, it's funny or it's not. And the stuff he did about Mr. T being gay, for example, was fucking funny. I'm sorry. Was it offensive? Yes. It was gross. It was whatever. But it was funny. And Dave Chappelle's carried that torch further and said, I'm going to say things that are funny, and you might get offended by them. And if you do, deal with it. And he's got a bunch of shit for it. And anyway, I'm getting us off the track here, and I apologize. But the idea that stand-up comedy is being regulated to the point where it is a symptom of how weird we've become as a society. Because,
well, I mean, I guess my bigger issue, like, getting away from stand-up comedy, my issue is, again, like, the progressive left overall, like, the loudest voices on the progressive left, Like they scream and yell about oppression all the time. Everything is oppressive, right? White people are oppressive. White men are the most oppressive. All the things are oppressive of all the people and all the things, right? Like, I mean,
it's right. Just, and then like, they want to...
Right, but at the same time, they will turn around and they will shut down anything that doesn't fall in line with their frame of thought. Like anything that deviates away from their agenda, which then causes them to cannibalize each other.
Yes.
Right? I mean, and like they will literally fight each other, which is insane. Like not, I mean, they're terrible fights. I mean, it's like literally like slap fights and weird hugging matches. And
by the way,
but I mean,
Chappelle had that Friday night sissy fights.
Yes, but I
just—that's what you just described.
That's what it is.
You're not wrong.
It's just it's a slap to the face, and then exchange of words and temper tantrums. But that to me is the sad, frustrating part, and it only is made worse on social media, right? I mean, because
it's
social media, you can't get punched in the face, right? I mean, like some of the things that people say, there's no way they would fucking say them in person because they some of the things that are said that have been said to me never get said, would never ever be said in person. And then on the few occasions where I've met people or interacted with people, oddly enough, they don't say these things that they say on social media. It's weird. I wonder why.
You don't wonder why. You know exactly
right.
Why.
I mean, so and that's what makes it so ridiculous. And I guess to me, it's just like have the if you're gonna fucking say it, then say it. But make sure you have the balls to say it in person.
And worse yet,
and then if you do get punched in the face, don't turn around and fucking sue and press charges.
Well, worse yet is people will say these things on social media, and it's not even their official social media, right? People will create troll accounts where all they're trying to do is stir up shit.
Yes.
You
know, there's a group of guys, there's a podcast that's called, well, actually, I'm not even going to say what it is, but there's a podcast, political, they leaned very, very conservative. There's some whiskey involved, and they have kind of deemed themselves as like Trump surrogates. So they've tried to fuck with us a couple of times, and I've never taken the bait.
Okay,
it's just kind of been like, all right, well, I don't know what you're talking about, weirdo, but fuck off. But they will try to stir the pot and try to get under your skin and all that stuff. And with trolls like them, literally the thing that pisses them off the most is when you just flat out ignore them. But the problem is there's so much of that on Twitter that if you ignore all of it and then you unfollow and you block and blah blah blah, you end up putting yourself in an echo chamber, right? Which also isn't much better, right? Like fair, just, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so you want to see all the different things that are out there. You just have to wade through a lot of shit, and it's not that much different in the real world. Although people have a little bit more sense about them.
All right, so we've yet to cover the Democratic debate,
okay?
Where Bloomberg was the target of everyone.
Yes.
And you expected that. And I don't know. I watched the debate. It was exactly what you'd expect. I mean, Bernie went after Bloomberg and others. The whole rest of the crowd did. There were only six people on the stage for this one, which was frankly...
Only six.
Well, which was frankly a relief.
Yes.
Because it was... people actually got a chance to talk. I thought Biden and Klobuchar came off pretty badly. I think Klobuchar did not, really gain any traction, nor did Pete Buttigieg. Everything seemed to be focused at Bloomberg. I don't know. It was to me a snooze fest, and the fact that it happened in Vegas was the only thing that was interesting to me because I miss Las Vegas.
One, go back.
Two, I barely survived.
Barely survived
the last one, thanks to you.
Go back and just drink a gallon of water before and drink while you're there. I think it was a little bit more. It wasn't completely a snooze fest. I thought there were just some good one-liners in there, which I don't think.
Which is what debates have become.
Right? Yeah, I mean, which I don't think have a lasting impact. I mean, you'll see, if you look at polling today, you'll see that Elizabeth Warren maybe got a little bit of a bump. Bloomberg's taking a little bit of a dip, and everybody else is about the same. It was somewhat entertaining to watch live, when Warren really kind of backed into Bloomberg about the non-disclosure agreements and sexual harassment stuff, and he did not respond well.
No, he did not.
Bloomberg kind of, like, some of his, dry New York attempts at humor because they weren't funny, were funny, I guess, to me. It just you know, some of the interaction, I am really tired of seeing Joe Biden on stage, just him getting all worked up, not being able to get out what he wants to say, and then just kind of going back to, I beat this person, I beat that person. Joe Biden, you have not won anything ever other than a Senate seat, right? Like, you didn't beat Mitch McConnell at anything. You didn't, you know what I mean? Like, you haven't won, you've run for president 3 times, and one of the times you had to drop out because you were fucking, you plagiarized. Like, it just...
Is it only 3?
This is the 3rd time.
All right.
Yeah, I'm tired of Joe Biden.
You've made that clear.
I really need him to go away. Hopefully he comes out of Super Tuesday with like no delegates and we can just be done with him. The rest, let him duke it out. You know, I mean, again, by the time we vote, a lot of the decision will kind of have been made.
Right.
The Ohio
primary is essentially irrelevant.
Right. I mean, it's not irrelevant, especially depending on where we are. But I think it'll be more parsed down. Like, I'm not throwing allegiance behind anybody yet because there's so few delegates that have been awarded that by the time it gets to us, things may have drastically shifted, right? Like, and so my whole thing is whoever's going to win, right? Like, I mean, because if we had more say, let's say we were the first state or the second or even third or fourth, and there was really a chance for us to have an impact, then yeah, I would find somebody to get behind and really promote them. But by the time it gets to us, there's really so little we can do. So now it has to be more about strategy and who's in the best position to really win the nomination, and will that person be able to go toe for toe with Trump? I feel like Bloomberg's probably the only one who can. I know a lot of people have faith in Bernie. I don't. I feel like Bernie's going to turn off a lot of people even within the party. I think the loudest percentage of people right now in terms of polling and voting and people on social media are saying it's Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. Like, they're driving the narrative more than anything.
That would include me, by the way.
Right, but I don't think that Bernie registers with nearly the mandate and with the numbers that people who support Bernie are telling you. Right? I mean, and listen, maybe I'm wrong. I just don't think I am.
The reason that I think people like me are behind Bernie is largely because I think he does have the ground game and the energy behind him, and I don't see that with anyone else. And I'm with you on Biden. I mean,
I'm not doubting Bernie's ground game. I'm not doubting the passion of his supporters. What I'm saying is, in terms of numbers of people who in a general election will vote for him for president based off the policies that he's presenting, that dude gets eviscerated. I'm sorry, the socialism word, like, I mean, people, you can talk about how unsophisticated people are, you can talk about how we have to have it because health insurance shouldn't be for profit, blah, blah, blah. Bro, people don't give a fuck. I'm sorry. Like, because a majority of your people are insured through their employer.
Right.
Right? Like, that's who...
Which is fundamentally fucked up, in my opinion.
I mean, it's fine. I get it. But, like, again, you have so many people are insured through their employer. So this idea that you're going to take insurance away from employers, right? Like, and people think they have a choice. We really don't have a choice, right? Like, at my job, I have 2 options.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, so you have options.
Right. Like, I have options, but I have 2 options, and they're actually from the same insurance company. They're just 2 different levels, right? One costs a little bit more, right? I mean, so your insurance comes through your employer, and then they do all the negotiating, and then you pay. And then the idea that you're going to take that away, which, okay, fine, but then you're going to turn it over to the government. We've seen how government handles things. It's not good. And no one has laid out how this would work, right? I get that the system is fucked up, but you're going to fundamentally change a massive system. And that, like, in doing so, I'm sorry, but shit is going to fall through the cracks. And what will fall through the cracks are people's lives. And I'm not really for or against it. One way or another, I'm literally neutral on it. I really don't give a shit. I don't.
All right.
So, I
do.
I mean, like, you do, but that's because you're not, like,
I'm self-employed.
Because you're self-employed and you're pissed. And, like, everybody in your situation, they're, fuck yeah, I want government. I don't want to pay for healthcare. COBRA's a joke. And I fully agree with you. Got you. All right. But there's a lot more people who are not in your situation who are telling you to fuck off. Right. Like, so the problem is you guys are in the minority. Right, you guys are in the minority, and you're not only are you in the minority in terms of actual numbers, you are in the minority in terms of opinion.
You're right.
So, I mean, like, so should you be able to control what happens to me and everybody else who aren't in your position. And that's all right, that's the whole thing.
And that's not how I view. I'm not trying to control the situation you're in. I'm saying that it's bullshit that
you are.
Well, okay, whatever. What I'm saying is it's ridiculous that I work for this company and that affects my healthcare. And if I no longer work for that company, cut off. That's bullshit.
I don't disagree with you. I like the model. The model sucks. All right,
but
it's your, right it's now. Right. I don't like. Not only have I haven't seen a like. You can point to other countries. Blah blah blah. There's a million reasons why there's issues with pointing to them because of just sheer volume, right? Like, I mean, you look at volume, and then you also look at the overall cause and effect, right? Like, everybody loves the Cleveland Clinic right now, and you're thinking, hey, we're going to switch to the government, and they're going to pay for insurance, and I'll be good to go, and I'll just pay through my taxes, and I can still go to the Cleveland Clinic and get the best care. Fuck off, because now what is Cleveland Clinic's incentive to be the best hospital in the fucking world, right? Like, right now, it's fucked up, but Cleveland Clinic is driven by money. That's how they're able to afford all those fancy buildings in Cleveland and fucking Florida and Dubai. Why there's a Cleveland Clinic in Dubai? I mean, we know why, but all that shit is driven by profit, right? Sure. Whether we like it or not. And once you take that away, and you say you're all going to get paid.
Taking it
yes,
away.
You are, because they're all going to get paid the same. Right, like they're not like in like pay for doctors, pay all that shit goes down. Right, the ability to fund research, all like you're about to put 300 million people on insurance. It's got to be paid, right? And just us paying it through taxes is not going to be enough to be able to keep things where they are.
Well,
if y'all want to do it, fucking do it. I don't care. You know, I mean, if you want to do it, my kid's healthy. I'm relatively healthy enough, and I got insurance, life insurance, and so on and so forth. If y'all want to do it, go ahead.
I just realized you're without a brace today.
It's off. It's not supposed to be off till Saturday, but I couldn't fucking take it.
All right. So if you listen to the show, Steve got his arm jacked up because he lifts heavy things and fucked up his tricep tendon in a way that doctors thought was almost impossible. But congratulations.
It's not quite that dramatic, but it was close. It was not
all
good.
Right. All right, brother. We're over an hour.
Fortunately, I have insurance. I don't pay too much for it, so it got squared away.
There we go. All right, let's do some sports talk real quick, because this Saturday, so when this gets published, it will be the day after Tyson Fury fights Deontay Wilder. Now, first of all, Tyson Fury is probably the coolest boxing name ever.
Yeah.
Named after Mike Tyson. Last name is Fury. He's kind of a clown. I mean, I rewatched their first fight a couple days ago. And he was sticking his tongue out and doing weird shit, trying to taunt Deontay Wilder. He's a weird dude. And his nickname is the Gypsy King. He's an Irish gypsy. I mean, he's basically what Brad Pitt was supposed to be. If Brad Pitt's character in Snatch was not in shape, it would be Tyson Fury.
And also fucking 6'10" or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, he's fucking huge. Anyway, I'm curious about this fight, but what bothers me the most is that no one seems to give a shit. It is,
well, which
heavyweight boxing has fallen so far off the social radar.
If you're comparing it to Tyson at his heyday or Ali and Foreman.
Even Evander Holyfield, Lennox Lewis.
But that's, I mean, part of that is on boxing itself.
True. Oh, absolutely. It's 100% on boxing itself.
And you didn't have anybody that you wanted. I mean, you and I have you've watched boxing probably a little bit more consistently than I have, but I've been around boxing my whole life.
Sure.
You know, I'm a fan. I love the sport. I watch it, but the problem was there was nobody I wanted to fucking watch. I mean, the people from my hometown that were boxing, Kelly Pavlik is somebody that I love.
Sure.
I love to watch.
I was a fan.
And a few of the
Ray Mancini was before that.
Yeah, but sure, I mean, he hadn't been boxing for a while. But I mean, you know, like, and I watched Oscar De La Hoya, and I watched a lot of people. But the problem was, the only people worth watching was Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, you know, through the mid-2000s. Yeah. And I mean, literally that was it. You know, I mean, you know, Roy Jones Jr. had kind of fizzled out by the, you know, early 2000s. And like, who did we have?
The thing about Roy Jones Jr. that bothers me is the reason that he was not interesting to watch is he was so fucking good.
No, that's not true.
That is true.
No,
that is
he true. Was very. I
he
love
was
watching.
Amazing,
dude. He was so fucking fast. I mean, like that alone was worth watching.
For me, but you never watched a Roy Jones Jr. fight and thought this guy could lose. He was so fucking good.
No, and, I mean, and, I. And I. That's why I disagree with you. I mean, I think people liked watching him. I think he did himself a little bit of a disservice with the weight fluctuations, jumping up and down and things like that. I mean,
jumping
up
to heavyweight was a mistake for him.
Right. I mean, so there's...
And then trying to drop back down to one. We've talked about this.
Yes. I mean, so I think that boxing in and of itself between their... In it, like between just the greed of the promoters, the just disjointed nature of the belts and unification titles, and
totally fair,
you know, not getting certain fights that should have happened and letting fights just linger and fizzle, like all that is like it's like you can't blame like we like there were fights people wanted to see for years and years.
I mean, Pacquiao Mayweather was something we wanted for
it took 15 years before, or 10 years or whatever. Well, not quite 15, but I mean it took damn near 10 years for that fight to happen. And by the time it happened, you know, Mayweather's Pacquiao about to retire. Right. Pacquiao's beat to shit, so you can't. Blame you can't be mad at everybody else because they're not interested because boxing couldn't do what it was supposed to do between finding fighters that anybody was wanted to watch and then boxing's inability to get the few people together that people wanted to see actually getting the fights together.
And so to that point, the fight that's going to happen on Saturday should fix that. Deontay Wilder is charismatic.
This will be their second fight. I don't know if it's going to...
I doubt it will.
It's not going to undo... I mean, like, listen, you've got probably 15 to 20 years since we've really been passionate about boxing, since we've had a heavyweight champ that we cared about. You know, Evander Holyfield and Tyson fought. I mean, I was in college when they fought. I mean, that was 2002... I believe when the ear biting incident happened.
Oh, I think it was before that. Actually, I think it was way before that.
Oh no, I don't know. I thought
I think it was mid '90s when the ear biting thing happened. I mean, Tyson and Buster Douglas was 1990.
Okay,
so it was 30 years ago. The Holyfield biting the ear thing was 3 or 4 years after that.
No, I thought that happened after Tyson got out of jail.
It did, but Tyson got out of jail in like 1995. Anyway, the point is, there is a heavyweight championship fight going on between an American and a guy from Great Britain, which are probably the two biggest boxing savvy / intense countries in the world. And I guarantee you, if I go into a bar and say, hey, what do you think about the fight this weekend? People will ask me, is John Jones fighting someone again?
Yeah.
So, I mean, boxing has lost a ton of
momentum. Yeah, that was 97.
97? Okay.
There was a fight that happened in college. There was a Holyfield fight that happened in college, maybe. I don't know.
Riddick Bowe would have been his other main, you know. The Riddick Bowe fight, actually, that was 92 or 3. I was at a party in college, and I was drunk as shit, and that was bad. But anyway, all right, so one other thing I want to touch on real quick is the NFL is about to renegotiate their collective bargaining agreement. And they're talking about expanding to 17 games. And that's weird to me. Because an uneven number of games mean you either have to have an uneven number of home games or a neutral site game. And I honestly think if the NFL did expand to 17 games and had 8 home, 8 away, and 1 neutral site, that might actually be good marketing. Like, I can imagine, what if the Cleveland Browns played the Cincinnati Bengals in Columbus once?
Or Canton. Fucking Hall of Fame.
Or in fact...
Have you seen that stadium upgrade?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's amazing. It's also infuriating because I played in that stadium in high school. They play high school football games. And I played my last game of my career in high school was played in that stadium. And the old stadium was cool because it was really big, right? Hall of Fame, all that other shit. But this stadium, like, these kids playing in it, like, I just want to slap them. Like, how...
you know, funny... Anyway. I, when I was in college, ended up meeting a guy on the rapid transit in Morgantown, and yes, Morgantown does have a rapid transit, and he had transferred to WVU from a junior college, and he was telling me how in high school he played at the stadium in Canton, and then he went to college. He was like, in high school, I played in front of 20,000 people. I then go to junior college, and I'm playing in front of 500, and he just couldn't get his head around the fact that, like, you know, he was offended that I've gone to the next level, and yet I have 10% of the number of people watching the games. All right, brother, we've gone on for over an hour. You want to wrap this up?
Yeah, go ahead and shut it down. Right, so I was just looking at Evander Holyfield fights, and I was trying to,
Steve's playing with his phone is what he's trying to admit to. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I was trying to figure out what the fight... There was a fight, I remember, and the reason why I remember it, we were staying in the campus hotel in Amherst, and I had to sneak out because I had an assignment due, and I forgot something in my dorm room. So I had to sneak out of the hotel, get to my room, get whatever I needed, and then get back into the hotel without getting caught, which was hard. It was easier to do at away games. It was hard to do for obvious reasons on campus. And I was successful, but there was a fight going on, and I remember getting distracted by it because somebody was watching it. And then I was like, fuck, I got to get back to the hotel. Anyway, sorry.
And none of your college stories will ever top you getting blasted by a campus-mounted cop with a tray full of chicken fingers.
Well, it's not chicken fingers, Jim.
Oh, chicken tenders, sorry.
It was It was the meat. It was chicken. It was the meat from the Caesar salad. Like, it took a giant, two giant handfuls of chicken from the Caesar salad tray
and
put it in my container.
You got jacked up by a horse.
I got ran over by a horse.
On that note, we are at Whiskey Congress.
I also got ran over by a car.
Yeah, the horse is way funnier, though.
I don't know.
For me. I'm sorry.
For you. I don't know. Getting hit. I went over the hood of a Jeep.
The idea of you getting spun around by a horse and then getting yelled at for having done so is hilarious to me. And if that makes me a bad person, well, I think we've established
that. The fucker tried to give me a ticket. You ran me over. You ran me over. You knocked my food out of my fucking hand because these assholes are rioting about a fucking baseball game and I am somehow the one getting a goddamn ticket.
This is why I love the show. We are at Whiskey Congress on Twitter and Instagram, Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him. We are out. Thank you very much. And you got hit by horse and I didn't.